This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, normally when we're talking, I'm just focused on you, but today I noticed that there are a lot of other people in the room with you. I never realized they were there.
Chris, that's my people that kind of orbit me. That's my entourage.
That's your entourage.
Yeah,
okay.
They just kind of come in and out of my orbit. What can I say? I'm really kind of the center of the universe, or at least my universe. So, just ignore them. They're really good at being quiet. They understand when I'm podcasting with you that I'm not to be interrupted.
I thought so. Like when there's a story to be told, they kind of stay out of the picture, which is exactly what happens with what we're going to talk about today. It's the Bajoran solar system. Now, next week, we're going to be back to the next part of our look at the final chapter. It's going to be a huge, deep show. And the setup of shows like The Orb here on the network is to talk about all the little minutiae of the series and things that you may not even pay attention to. And Matthew, one of those things for me with Deep Space Nine is the fact that Bajor is part of a huge solar system, and we really never get that feeling. There are a few episodes where they talk about some of the other planets or the moons of Bajor, but for the most part, you really would have no idea that there are 14 planets orbiting the Bajoran star.
It is really funny. I mean, honestly, I'm thinking there's a few episodes there where we actually go to a Bajoran moon. They get that fighter that Dax and Kira have to, you know, kind of coax back to life and everything. Those are the few times that I can think of that where, you know, we really visit somewhere else other than Bajor in the system. And yet it is crazy to think, oh my gosh, you've got this entire system that we never really use any of the other planets. Now, the only other one I'm thinking of is the moon where the Romulans have put their hotel, where the Romulans have...
I love that Romulan Hilton. Yeah, it's really nice.
It's so good. It's where the Romulans had put their hospital for their wounded, and they've been storing weapons there, so there's that whole thing that goes on. But again, that's one of Bajor's moons. It's not actually one of the other planets in the system. So it is crazy that we just really don't get a lot of this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those two moons that we do visit a little bit when we get to Bajor itself here in the discussion today. I always found it odd that a planet the size of Bajor would have these habitable moons that had environments that were apparently just like Bajor. Like you can, has the same air and everything, but we'll talk about that when we get there. One other thing that's really odd for me, Matthew, so if you don't know anything about the Bajoran system, and you think about how we generally see solar systems like our own, where would you think Bajor is located in that solar system amongst all these planets?
Well, I mean, you'd honestly think that Bajor would be quite early in the system. And like our Earth is in, they call it, you know, the Goldilocks zone. And from what we know of life, a planet needs to be somewhere in the zone. But wow, looking here Bajor is actually quite far. There's a lot of planets in the way, comparatively. In fact, yeah. Deep Space Nine itself is in orbit of the Bajoran sun, which I honestly didn't know, Chris. I just at least didn't pick it up.
Think about it.
Right? In the first episode of Deep Space Nine, we move the station so that it's no longer orbiting Bajor, but it's closer to where the wormhole is, which is right outside the Denorius belt. Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize is that Deep Space Nine itself is orbiting the Bajoran sun, just as all the planets are, and it's making its way around the sun in orbit. So I just think this is really interesting that it's a part of the solar system. Deep Space Nine is a part of the solar system there. So crazy to me to think that the planets are revolving around and Bajor is revolving around, and so is Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, you never think about that. Do you? Although I get the feeling spatially that it's still close to Bajor itself.
Yes. I do get that feeling that they are quite close.
The wormhole itself seems to be quite close to Bajor.
Which, does the wormhole orbit at all, or is that stationary? That's a good question, Chris.
I think it's stationary.
Okay, so that means the station itself is stationary, but then everything else kind of revolves around that, which means that Bajor, at some points, is farther away from the station than it is at other times, because as it goes around its orbit of the sun, you know, so you'd want to make your trip to Bajor when it's closer to the station than when it's further away.
You know, Matthew, the way I think of it, actually, and I've never really thought about this before either until you bring it up here, I just kind of picture, well, there's Bajor and there's the space station, there's the wormhole. But yeah, when they move the station in the first episode, as you mentioned, I think it's sort of like moving it out to one of the Lagrangian points in our solar system, where sort of the gravitational effect of two objects kind of balances it out so that you can keep sort of a stationary place. That's where we would put a space telescope, for example.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I think it's probably working there.
Yeah, which just an interesting thing to think about, you know, how the, you know, what they've set up on the show and that solar system, how it actually works. You know, obviously, I think you're right. The wormhole doesn't orbit at all. It's a stationary point, which means the station is a stationary point. And yet,
although if that's true, then it's sort of weird that you can always see. Well, it's not weird that you could see the wormhole from the space station, but it's weird that the space station and the planet Bajor would always seem to be near each other, because you would think there would be times where the planet is on the other side of the sun while the space station is in the stable point and the wormhole's nearby.
Right.
But we never get that feeling on the show.
No. We always get the feeling like that the station and Bajor and the sun and everything is all in the same place.
Yeah.
But I guess that's kind of the nature of the, you know, a TV show, that we don't think necessarily always think about all the logistics that go into something.
You can see, like, they're in the writer's room and they have this idea for a story.
Oh, nope, sorry.
Ira says, we can't tell that until season 6 because we've got to wait for the planet to loop back around the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's jump back into this here with this system, though. Bajor itself, like you said, there are so many planets. Bajor is actually Bajor 11. There are 10 planets and an asteroid belt, the Denorius belt, I should say, in between the Bajoran sun and Bajor itself. So you never get that feeling that that's the case. And of course, it depends on the Bajoran sun and what type of star it is as to what would be the Goldilocks zone in that solar system. It would have to be a very powerful star, very much stronger than our sun, or else these 10 planets all have a super, super tight orbit in order for that to be where the Goldilocks zone is. Now, there is a diagram of the Bajoran star system, which is shown on an Elkhart's display in Sons of Moog. And we do see where everything is located. And that's how we do know that, in fact, yes, the Deep Space Nine station is orbiting the star. And we also see the location of all these different planets. And the orbit is much further out. I would say it's almost where Jupiter or Saturn might be in our solar system. So the Bajoran star must be fairly strong.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, just kind of looking through this and seeing that diagram. I've got the Star Trek Deep Space Nine technical manual. It's in there as well. And so I was looking at that. I was thinking, wow, this is very interesting. And it makes me wonder then that kind of information. Okay, what is the star that, you know, Bajor orbits, and just how powerful is this star to be able to actually have this be a reality of having this planet so far away from what it's orbiting, as its you know, power source, its life source. And so, yeah, this is a really interesting thing, Chris. Some things that I've never thought about with Deep Space Nine,
right?
Just thought about in the last like 12, 13 minutes.
Well, we were like, we should talk about the Bajoran system. And then we didn't even think about some of these details.
It's crazy once you get into it.
Well, let's just go through real quick. So most of the inner planets, you know, Bajor 1, we see it on this diagram that we're talking about. Bajor 1, most of these inner planets, we only see them on this display that we've been talking about, and we don't really know anything else about them. That's the case for Bajor 2, for Bajor 3, for Bajor 4. We don't know how large these planets are, other than clearly on the diagram, they are small rocky planets that you would expect to find in the inner solar system. We don't really know how they compare in size to Bajor 11, which is Bajor itself. But we keep going through, and when we get to actually Bajor 7, we know that a shuttle was lost near the third moon of Bajor 7. This is from the episode Whispers. And then DS9 sent two runabouts out there to search for the shuttle. So we know just a little bit about Bajor 7. Now, Bajor 8, this is a place where Bajorans actually established 6 colonies. And they did that before 2369, which is where we pick up with things. And we know that the Yangtze Kiang, if you remember when Tana Los came on.
Oh, yeah.
This is the planet where they went and they rendezvoused with Lursa and Bator.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Man, that's goodness. Thinking all the way back there to that episode, that first season.
Yeah.
Yeah, goodness. It's been a long time since I've watched through the first season of Deep Space Nine, so.
Well, you usually start off with, what do you start off with? Duet at the end of the first season and go from there, or what?
Yeah.
Well, Emissary, of course, but then, you know.
Definitely. I mean,
I'm just kidding. I like some of the first season episodes.
I do too. It's just been a long time since I've done a full rewatch, which I will be doing and not too far from now, hopefully. But yeah, oh my goodness, that's great.
So also, according to star charts, Bajor 8 goes by the name of Andros and is a K-class planet with 2 moons.
Goodness, that is, I mean, I'm just thinking through this. So you have all of these planets in this system, and then some of them have their own moons. This is a very full system. Bajoran system is really full. And it makes me wonder and kind of think through, I wonder why there weren't kind of more stories kind of around, you know, some of the colonies that we had. And,
that's,
you know,
the thing,
and,
right?
It makes me wonder that, because, you know, when you have yourself on the station and you're, you know, in one place at the beginning of the show and you're trying to kind of figure things out, seems like it would have been a natural story element to have these colonies and how they were dealing with the pullout of the Cardassians and everything that happened there. So lots of story elements that we never saw on Deep Space Nine, and things that they could have done that, again, I've never even thought of until we just, you know, just thinking about, okay, well, this is the system. This is what's here.
Yeah. And, right. Well, that's what I wondered as well. And that's why I wanted to do this topic, was to think about why they established such a huge solar system, and yet it really doesn't play into the stories very much. Dealing with Bajor 8 here, though, by the way, a parallel, so you can think about what is a K-class planet. Mars is considered a K-class planet. So that's, you can think of Mars, and that'll give you a picture of what Bajor 8 is like. So let's go on. Bajor 9, we don't know anything about that. other than it is on an inclined orbit within the system, and it appears on that tactical chart that we're talking about. Bajor 10, same thing. We see it on the chart. And then we get to Bajor 11, which is Bajor as we know it. And then from there, we'll talk about the moons in just a minute. I'm going to come back to those. Keep going through the planets here. Bajor 12, we don't know really anything about that other than it is a C-class planet according to star charts. And to tell you what that would be like, in our own solar system, a C-class planet would be Pluto.
Oh, wow. And of course, so that's not even really a planet anymore. We call that a dwarf planet. So
that's right. And then we know Bajor 13 would also be a C-class planet. And then there is good old Bajor 14, which is a C-class planet. So if we come back in, I actually said we didn't know much about these other planets. We do know a little bit, and this comes from star charts, though, okay? So it's not, it wasn't established on screen. Bajor 10 is an I-class planet, the gas supergiant.
Oh, okay.
And it would be in the cold zone of the solar system. We know that Bajor 9 is also an I-class planet. Bajor 6, as we come back towards the star here, this is an L-class planet, which has limited plant life. You could colonize it. It does have oxygen atmosphere. No real parallel in the solar system here other than maybe kind of like Earth, perhaps. Although Earth is, of course, a class M planet. So maybe I'm thinking like a thinner atmosphere, for example. An example of it is Indra 8 from The Chase, one of those planets that they go to when they're looking for all those clues in the DNA.
I think what's most interesting to me is that, you know, you have Bajor, the planet where everybody lives, the Bajor 11. And then the next couple of planets are C-class planets, you know, like Pluto. Right, yeah. So it's very odd to me that that's the configuration of the system. It seems a little bit off, especially from kind of how we think of Star Trek of trying to get, you know, the science right. I'm not really so sure of the science of the Bajoran system.
Maybe not, although recent information that we've gained as we've learned more about exosystems does challenge the idea that we've always had that our configuration is somehow the norm, that like you need to have a giant like Jupiter to hold everything together in that location within the solar system. You know, we're finding that solar systems do come in all sorts of configurations. So it could be that DS9 was ahead of its time and really foretold what we're starting to learn now.
Which, as we've seen in Star Trek, has happened a lot.
Yeah. And as we keep moving in, Bajor 5 is an N-class planet, which is like Venus. So it is weird, right, that we do have some planets that are more like what we're familiar with in the positions where we might expect to find them. And then we have the M-class Bajor 11, way out there in the outer solar system with a lot of these
C-class
bodies out there with them. So let's talk about the moons a little bit. Gerardo. Gerardo is the one that we probably see the most because this is the one where they go to pick up the raider, the little ship that had been hidden on the moon in the siege. And we also learn about the Paluku, the spiders, the giant spiders that live there on the moon that are indigenous to Gerardo, apparently. And also, Gerardo is where Progress takes place, if you remember the episode Progress. And that's the one where I always thought it's really weird that there's this moon of Bajor that apparently has this in this atmosphere and this environment that's pretty much like the planet. It's an M-class moon orbiting an M-class planet. Like, I can see an M-class moon orbiting a gas giant, but an M-class moon orbiting an M-class planet is something that's kind of hard for me to imagine.
Well, and not only is it kind of hard to imagine, but then what they do with the planet was interesting to me, that they're going to utilize the core to provide energy to Bajor. However, this leaves an entire planet uninhabitable. I mean, it just seems unfathomable to me that you would destroy an entire planet that you could grow food on and have much other uses for.
Because they're farming there. Right. We see that in progress.
It just doesn't really make sense to me. That's one of those episodes where I feel like they just hadn't necessarily thought this through all the way for how you'd want to use an entire world that people could live on.
Yeah, it's this moon Gerardo has a molten core, which is how they're gonna. It's their plan to get energy from it. It revolves around the molten core, and just the idea that I mean, I feel like you would be dealing here more with a binary planetary system as opposed to moons, and And Bajor has five moons, and we know that two of them are habitable. So it seems like you'd be dealing with a very, like the gravitational forces of these bodies. Because in order to be habitable, in order to be M-class, the planet has to be able to hold the atmosphere. And we see in our own solar system how Mars can't hold on to its atmosphere. You know, they think Mars once had oceans or had water anyway, and was probably a lot like Earth is now. But it's small, and it doesn't have the gravitational pull to keep that atmosphere in place, and so I don't really know how a moon like Gerardo would work.
Yeah, it is strange to me, and not only does it, you know, Bajor apparently have, you know, one moon, Gerardo, but it also has Derna as well, which also has its own atmosphere, and we talked a little bit about that with the fact that the Romulans had put their
hotel.
Their hotel, of course. but no, they had used that as their field hospital for the large number of wounded that were coming back during the Dominion War. And so to have this many habitable moons surrounding a habitable planet seems very interesting, because usually what you get is a planet that's uninhabitable but is being orbited by a habitable moon, kind of like in forgive me, Star Trek fans, for referencing this, but like in Star Wars, in Return of the Jedi, you have Endor, and it is a habitable moon that is orbiting a gas giant. And so kind of interesting to that's usually what we think of. So it makes me wonder, just if we could pick the brains of the creators of Deep Space Nine, you know, were you thinking about using these planet or, you know, these moons more often and you just never did? Or, you know, what was it that kind of made you go in this direction? Because there's a lot of story elements, I think, there. I mean, we used it, you know, we do use Gerardo in Progress, but then, of course, we make it inhabitable. So I don't know. It's an interesting concept that doesn't really get explored.
No, it doesn't. And I think if they're there, it would have been good to use them. I think if the solar system is this large, it could have been utilized in many different ways. Even during the Dominion War, there are lots of different ways that you could use it. I mean, you could establish some sort of defense perimeters on these C-class Plutoids out there, especially since they're near Bajor. I don't really know what they were going for here. I'm fine with the idea, like the idea within science fiction that there could be an M-class planet with M-class moons. That's great. I can go with it. I'd like to see it fleshed out and have some explanation to it, especially with Star Trek, because they do try to put real science into the stories here.
And I think that it's one of those things, Chris, too, that if we kind of drilled down with a lot of things in Star Trek, probably would be surprised how many things just don't make sense at all in science. But and what I think makes it special is that it has the aura that it does. So we don't usually think about these kind of things until we get to, you know, a show like we're doing here. Okay, let's talk about the Bajoran system. And then we're looking at it. We're like, I've never thought about this, and this doesn't really make sense. And so how would this really work? And you put all that together, and it is interesting because they usually do such a great job of masking those things on Star Trek.
Yeah. And so, Matthew, here's one more element of the Bajoran system. This is the Denorius belt. Now, earlier on, I think I mentioned that there was like an asteroid belt. It's not an asteroid belt, but it's located sort of in the place where we would think of the asteroid belt in our solar system. The Denarius belt is actually a charged plasma field around the Bajoran sun in the middle of the solar system, and it divides the system so that you have planets on the inside and planets on the outside. You've got five planets to the outside of the belt, and then you've got the remaining nine planets on the inside. Now, also earlier, so far we've been talking about the location of Bajor, the location of the Deep Space Nine space station, also the location of the wormhole. In terms of how they feel when we're watching the show, how they seem to be located with in relation to each other. In reality, the way it's been established anyway is that when they moved the station in Emissary, they actually moved it into the Denarius belt, which it feels odd to me because sometimes they talk about how charged particles and such inside the Denarius belt affect ships and this and that. But at the same time, the wormhole is inside the Denarius belt, and so that's why you have charged particles. So the idea that the station is inside the Denarius belt feels odd, and if you look at that diagram that we've been talking about, it actually shows the station just outside of the Denarius belt. So it's a little confusing as to what is actually correct here. You know, this stuff just gets mentioned on screen. It isn't firmly established. But at any rate, the station is about 20,000 kilometers away from the wormhole, and they are both apparently inside the Denarius belt. And then they say that to travel between the station and Bajor at impulse takes about 3 hours. But again, as we talked about earlier, in reality, that means that Bajor and the station and the wormhole would all have to be locked into some sort of orbit together so that they're all orbiting around the Bajoran sun at the same pace all the time. And let's remember that there is a planet in between the Denarius belt and Bajor. There's another planet in between there. Bajor 10 is there. So it's kind of confusing.
Well, and then too, what's really interesting as well, Chris, is that it makes me wonder, is the Denarius belt there because of the wormhole? Like the fact that does the Denarius belt exist because the prophets have created a stable wormhole there and it creates this plasma field? It made me wonder then too, how long has the Denarius belt been there? Has it been there forever, or did it come into being when the prophets decided to create the stable wormhole and then it came into being? So it there's a whole lot of questions that when I was thinking about this earlier came to my mind with this this kind of interesting phenomenon we get in the Bajoran system.
Well, we know that it's apparently been there for a long time because that's how ancient Bajorans got to Cardassia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First, before they had light ships, and that's how Sisko proves that in Explorers as well. And poets like Akoram Lan, mm-hmm. He disappeared in the belt, right? And there's been, there are tales of this throughout Bajoran history. So it seems like it's been there for a really long time. And if the fact that the neutrino disturbances kind of have an effect on the belt does seem to imply that there is a connection between the prophets and the wormhole and the Denarius belt and the plasma field somehow.
Yeah, and it made me wonder why that was something that never kind of got explored. It just seemed like a very Starfleet thing to do. Okay, we've got this station now. We found this wormhole, and we've got this interesting phenomenon with the Denarius belt. And then they never really study it. Like nothing really comes of it much, except for in Explorers when they use it to kind of help explain how these light sail ships made it all the way to Cardassia. So it's just one of those things I wish that they had kind of picked up on, especially with the fact that, in the first and second seasons, Deep Space Nine and its characters don't really, you know, go very far, except for with their runabouts. And these seem like some of the interesting story points they might have been able to use and create some interesting things with, you know, Starfleet technology maybe going awry or, you know, all that kind of stuff that can happen. So, yeah, a lot of interesting questions that come up just by looking at the Bajoran system itself. And who would have thought?
Right. So there we go. That's the Bajoran system. A very specific topic this week, I know. But if you're like us and you know how well Matthew and I know DS9 and how many times we've watched it, and we've also never really thought about the fact that there is a star, 14 planets, 2 habitable moons, 5 total moons around Bajor, plus moons around all these other planets, and the Denorius Belt, and of course the wormhole, all of this crammed together in this one solar system.
And hopefully, you know, people like us, Chris, that listen to the show enjoyed it, because we did. We thought of a lot of things I'd never thought of, and I'm kind of wondering now, this solar system doesn't make a lot of sense.
It really doesn't.
It's going to bother me now when I watch this show.
It really doesn't, but at the same time, like I said, we are finding all sorts of configurations for solar systems. Just in the past couple of years, there's this great project going on from the International Astronomical Union and Zooniverse right now, where people can actually name exoplanets and name exosystems. And that it's exciting to me as we're learning more and more about these things that we could look back a few decades from now and go, you know, that Bajoran system, it's just like these other three systems that we have found.
Definitely.
So who knows? Who knows? All right. Well, planets and moons are not the only thing that we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It was the biggest opening ever for a movie. And, you know, it got huge critical acclaim and success. And fans were, you know, most, not every, but most fans were really happy with it.
Earl Grey.
Kids these days, gosh, back in my day, our nacelles were round and we went warp 5.
And our dishes were large.
Our dishes were large and we liked it that way.
The Ready Room.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about that in terms of the population is everybody on Ameniar seems to have a number in their name, which may indicate that they have a lot of children, perhaps, to kind of compensate for the fact that they're killing 3 million people a year.
The Orb.
Morn chest bumping, a dancing Bolian is one of the best scenes in Deep Space Nine.
So awesome.
To the journey! When you brought it up, I was like, that's right, because it's that weird moment when you're like, is that Dietrich Bader? What's going on?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
indeed it is.
And he had this weird kind of like Jerry curl thing going on in his hair. Commentary, Trek Stars.
I was even a little bit of an Voyager. That was Kes. But then they, you know, decided to not do that and just made her a space carry, which is what her name should have been. Neelix and space carry.
Warp 5.
I feel like that's an award that didn't exist until DVDs existed. Like, no one had the best Betamax release of the year.
Right.
It just wasn't a thing.
And it always goes to the one studio that decided not to turn their back on Betamax.
Continuing mission.
I think it will be fun for younger people. I think it will be fun for people that can connect with those characters in this family situation.
Literary Treks.
The relationship that she's having with Spock at this point is one of a very deep friendship, like a very deep friendship. And she's caring for her friend who's gone through what could only be considered a trauma.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find them everywhere that you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. Just search for The Orb or Trek.fm or the name of any of these shows that you want to listen to, and you'll find us there. And you can get every episode of The Orb and every episode of every show that we do in the Trek.fm Complete Master Feed. So be sure to subscribe to that as well. And if you're in iTunes or on Stitcher, be sure to review The Orb, because you can get your name into the drawing for some great Star Trek prizes. Every time you review one of our Trek.fm shows, you can get your name in the drawing for a season of Star Trek on Blu-ray or DVD of your choice, some Star Trek novels of your choice, official Starship Collection ships from Japan, and a complete collection of our alien art badges. We're running this until July 31st. Every review left before midnight on July 31st will count as an entry, and you can review us on Stitcher and on iTunes both, and that will count as two reviews. So review The Orb in both places, plus you can review the master feed. So if you've already reviewed The Orb in the past, you can review the master feed, and that'll count as an entry. There are two steps to entering, but it's very simple. First is to leave your reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher. Second is to go to trek.fm/review, fill out the form that you find there. That will help us match up your real name to your reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, let us know which shows you reviewed, where you left them, and we'll know how to get in contact with you if you win, and also so we can thank you for your reviews. So go leave your reviews today, get in the running for these prizes, and we really thank you for supporting the shows and helping us get word out to more Star Trek fans about The Orb and everything that we're doing here at Trek FM. Now, if you would like to leave your feedback on today's show, let us know also, Matthew, I'm sure that you would also like to know about really specific topics like this one that people would like to know more about on Deep Space Nine, things that you've never really thought about before. But as you're watching an episode, you see some little tidbit like this and think, I would like to know more about that. I wonder what Matthew and Chris can dig up. Let us know. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to both of us by email. We're also on social media. TrekFM is our username on Twitter. Facebook.com/TrekFM. We have a community on G+. Send us a voicemail through the website. Go to our forums. Trek.fm/forums. Lots of ways for you to contact us. Now, Matthew, when you're not figuring out which Bajoran planet you're going to go to for your next vacation, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me trying to pick out the best book to read on that vacation and Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and comics here, Chris, on Trek FM. And you can also find me trying to figure out my next blog post at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out and wrestle in your mind the fact that Bajor has all of these different moons, two of them are habitable, one of them has been ruined by environmental catastrophe of using it for just a really bad idea, just needing power on Bajor, where can we find you?
Yeah, and I've been losing sleep over this, Matthew. It's really getting to me. I need to find something else to do with my life.
Apparently. I mean, Chris, it's a fictional universe. It's going to be okay.
All right. Well, you can find me at the latest meeting of the Bajoran Astronomical Union, where we're debating whether or not to demote Bajor 12, 13, and 14 from the status of planet to dwarf planet.
It's important work, Chris.
I know. Someone's got to do it. And I'll be talking about that on Twitter, where my username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones. And I have my own website as well, CBrianJones.com. And then I do lots of other shows here on the network. Literary Treks, of course, with you, Matthew, as you mentioned. Also, The Ready Room, Matterstream, Continuing Mission, Hyper Channel, and the new Axanar podcast also. So if you're interested in Star Trek Axanar, be sure to tune in to that with Alec Peters and me. Every week, we're joined by great guests. We have David Gerald coming up on the next episode. We also have an episode with Robert Meyer Burnett coming up. It's really interesting to find out what's going on behind the scenes there. Before we let you go, we would like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com, the best source of audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. If you decide not to stick with Audible at the end of the trial, there is nothing to lose. You get to keep that book. But by supporting Audible, you're making it possible for us to keep The Orb coming to you every single week. So if you love the show, please drop by and check it out, audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into The Orb.